Join me, won't you?
Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I thought I would start the show with a little window into what one of my career counseling clients' sessions are like. So I created transcripts of a couple, and I'm going to share little excerpts with you. I think they might be of relevance to you or someone you care about who's got a career issue. One is related to somebody who's just failed, who's graduated college recently and just doesn't seem to be motivated to start a career. And the other one is an older person who was fired and has been procrastinating a lot in trying to land a job, getting, you know, starting the job search. So they're both related to motivation, which in the end ends up being a fairly important component of what I do. It's all well and good to make a recommendation. It's a whole other thing to act on it. And so it's the way medical doctors as well. It's all well and good to tell a patient to he or she's got to lose weight or stop smoking or drinking or doing drugs or whatever, but there's a Grand Canyon of difference between asking them to do it and they're actually doing it on an ongoing basis. So I thought these two little excerpts from recent career counseling sessions would be useful. So, okay. So in the excerpts with this guy, I'm making up his name. I'm changing a few irrelevant details to make sure his anonymity is protected. But I start by the excerpt starts by saying, deep down, why do you think you haven't launched a career in the 2 years since you graduated? We're going to call this guy Graham. I'm not sure. Maybe part of it is that so many of us aren't getting good jobs, so I'm not sure it's worth the effort. Maybe when the economy starts creating good jobs again. And part of it is I don't know what I want to do. I'm sort of interested in a lot of things, but not enough in any one thing to make me want to fight to be the one who gets the good job or into a good graduate school. Besides, I don't want more student debt unless I'm sure it's going to get me a career that's going to pay enough to justify the cost of graduate school. And then I then said, well, if stable, good income is your primary goal, well, graduate programs with the greatest probability of that include MBA, Master's in Public Administration, if you're more inclined that way, law school, medical school, physician assistant school, dental school, optometry school, also social work and nursing pay reasonably, and they'll likely remain in high demand. And Graham said, well, none of those jump out at me. Maybe I just need another year or two of exploring, maybe growing up a little, maybe meeting people who might open doors for me. I'm still young yet. And I say, you are still young, but I worry that another year or two of exploration is not going to make you that much more likely to find something you're willing to go full bore on. And even if you do, it may not be easy to convince an employer or graduate school that you, who took 3 or 4 years after college to explore while you are baristaing, which is what he did, and he actually quit a job from a... He didn't want to work at Starbucks or Pete's because he found it, quote, too corporate, but he worked at an independent coffee shop. But he found the pace too fast, and he quit that to work at a vape store where he's now working. Anyway, so I told him, this is back to the quote, you know, from the transcript, even if you do take a couple of years, it may not be easy to convince an employer or graduate school that you, who took 3 or 4 years after college to explore while you were baristaing and working at a vape store, that you are a more worthy applicant than someone fresh out of college. And Graham then said, I wouldn't tell him I was working at a vape store, but I understand. So fine, let's see if we can come up with some career that motivates me. So that was the excerpt, but I always like to not present a problem without solutions. So rather than tell you the career or two that I ended up suggesting for him, here are some careers that I often recommend to a lot of people that I thought I picked them out that I thought they'd be particularly interesting to the KLW listenership, and it may not be so obvious. One is higher education administrator. College campus, usually a pleasant place to work, generous vacation time. People who listen to the show tend to like to work for educational institutions, nonprofits, and the like. And there are really interesting jobs in student affairs, that is, program planning for students outside of the classroom, admissions, plenty of jobs in admissions, in alumni affairs. It's been said that higher education's biggest priority is raising money, and alumni, often the most plush office on campus is the alumni office. and faculty development, which is kind of an under-the-radar field that I was involved in myself. It's helping faculty to teach better because they're often hired and promoted based on how much research they do, so they at least make some effort to try to improve the quality of teaching by offering workshops and one-on-one coaching with faculty. So that's one. I've got a bunch of others, but I think this is a good time for me to give out the phone number. So if you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, either you are having a motivational problem or you don't know what you want to be when you grow up, or you're on the job but still unhappy, or self-employed. Maybe you want me to play Shark Tank with you. Sometimes I'm as tough as Kevin O'Leary, the tough guy on that show. But if you've got a business idea you want to run by me, I can certainly promise you I'll give you my candid opinion and ask you some questions. The phone number, for all those reasons, I call them a workover, which is what you do when you call in, but there is no pummeling involved. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. And this is a good time to call because what always ends up happening is toward the end of the show, people do procrastinate and wait and they call in and they have to wait on hold either a long time or they don't get on. So this is a good time to call. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, KALW, 415-841-4134. Okay, more careers that I often tend to recommend. Lobbyist. Government really is the modern Leviathan with mammoth power, growing power, and indeed, a few people would argue that, you know, the likely winner will be Hillary, and she's not exactly in favor of small government. So there should be jobs. And recognizing the power of government, companies, and, you know, activist organizations like unions and gender organizations and racial organizations, industry groups, don't want to eliminate, leave those out. They spend ever more to try to influence legislation. Higher education has got one of the biggest lobbies of all to try to get legislation to support higher ed. I mean, I've said before on the show, they've been amazingly successful in making student loans the only loan that cannot be discharged with bankruptcy. You can be sure a lobbyist made that happen, or more likely a phalanx of lobbyists. In any case, it's an interesting career for somebody who wants to either advocate for a union or a nonprofit or an industry or whatever. You do need to write well. You do need to research well. You need to think on your feet well. You need to make your case persuasively. And you got to have something that I don't have. It's this ineffable gift of getting people to want to do your bidding. Lobbyist, great career. Sure, a lot of lobbyists are lawyers, but not all are. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, unemployed, well-employed, and still unhappy, self-employed, working for the government, working for a company, working for a nonprofit, I usually will try to help. I will always try to help and usually can. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. There's 415-841-4134. Another career that I thought you might be interested in is program evaluator. The program evaluators evaluate questions like, is Head Start really worth the taxpayer dollars? Is it the wisest use of taxpayer dollars? Is it wise to train lab technicians online versus in person? What should the next generation teen pregnancy prevention program look like? That's the kind of questions program evaluators try to answer. What you do, and one of the fun parts of the job is you're getting immersed into a new program to evaluate every few weeks, every few months, and you get to use a combination of skills, some observations, some interviewing, some questionnaires. You get to be a presenter. You're presenting your results. You use statistics. And even if you're not a statistics whiz, usually you only need kind of basic statistics to do this job well. And if you don't have those skills, and they do require a lot of statistics, most evaluators refer those fancy statistics like multiple regression and Bayesian statistics and all the rest of it to a consultant. So even though if you're not a statistical whiz, doesn't mean you should eliminate program evaluator from your list of possibilities. Anyway, I have a lot more, but we have calls on the line. So I'll give out the phone number, though. If you have a question about your work life, I'll try to help with a workover. Phone number at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, this is Karen calling in.
Hi, Karen.
And I've worked quite a bit in higher education. One of the things I've noticed, because I've been in HR, in administration, and certainly worked as an adjunct professor or lecturer, mm-hmm. is that there's a nepotism piece in hiring. Working around that is possible, but very difficult. And it's also unspoken. It's unwritten. Sometimes it takes some digging around to try to understand why, for instance, one ethnic group is right. overrepresented by 400% in a certain little pocket department.
Right.
Any comments on that, please, sir?
First of all, it's completely legitimate. I've seen it, but it's not limited to universities. You know, we like to think that we all are fair-minded, but we do live in a world ever more balkanized by race, gender, sexual orientation, and family, you know, people you know, friends you know, etc. And too often, those factors play a huge role in the hiring decision, sometimes more than merit. And, you know, I'm not sure there's an easy answer to that. That those preferences, and some of those preferences are actually encouraged by government. You know, I'm not sure there's an easy answer. I think that there has been favoritism and lack of meritocracy since the caveman days. So all one can do, and I don't have anything profound to say other than two things. If you want, you can't beat them, join them. So if there is a group of people who or somebody who is your advocate, you know, whether it be just because you're friends and it doesn't matter that race, gender, sexual orientation or whatever, somebody who is your advocate, you know, it is important for you to build relationships with folks who have power, whatever their race, gender, sexual orientation is, and try to let them act on your behalf, because it is not just a matter of keeping your head down and doing your work well. On the other hand, keeping your head down and doing your work well is part of the equation, and not just doing it, but thinking about if there are ways to focus on tasks that are high value for the organization. So if for the organization right now is very much focused on creating a new system for online record keeping for students or payroll or whatever, becoming more expert in that not sexy, not fun, but in demand area can also make you more desirable. Are you still there? I thought I heard a click. Did you hang up? Okay. So anyway, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi, it's you. Are you still there? No, I guess person's gone. Let's go to next line. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Is this me?
It is.
Thank you for your show. I'm sorry, but I am referring to your show last week.
Okay.
You were saying for jobs that are emotionally difficult that sometimes you have to, or all the time, have to just toughen yourself.
I may have said that as one thing. Yes, I know I remember, yes. Oh. Whether it be a teacher in a challenging community or a physician, you need to strike the balance between, on the one hand, being empathic and creating that human connection that is so important. On the other hand, having just enough of an emotional wall that you don't get burned out too quickly. Is that a fair summary?
Well, I'm glad to hear you say more strongly that you can, be empathic.
I'm absolutely sure I said that. I'm obsessed with this balance thing, maybe to my detriment. Anyway, is there anything else you wanted to do, or is that just what you wanted a clarification on?
I was certainly guessing that you don't like to have to tell people to toughen up, but there are groups that can be helpful for that, support groups for caregivers and so forth.
Yeah, those are definitely, those are very challenging jobs. I can't imagine. When my mom was old, she was almost 90, her major caretaker was fabulous, but it's exhausting.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Anyway, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, give out the phone number again. If you have a work-related problem, the phone number for what I call a work over here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, is that me?
It is.
Oh, good. Hi, Marty. I have a sort of a strange sort of thing I wanted to investigate, and I really haven't figured out how to do it, or even if it's wise. But this is it. I discovered that, you know, kind of in the winter of life, that I like to dress alternatively, like as a woman. And I've kind of been developing this kind of routine as a bearded lady, and I come out, and you know, so I wanted to like be able to be in a club, maybe give a Garrison Keillor-esque sort of ramble that kind of discusses the whole aspect, including, you know, the way one dresses and all sorts of things that go with it. I think it'd be entertaining, but I don't know really where to go or how to do it, or whether it's even wise to do. What do you think?
Well, I certainly think you should try it. First of all, at minimum, it is the wind is at your back. Transgender issues are the media has moved front and center, focus on greater acceptance of transgender people. Now that gay marriage appears to be a given. The same folks that advocated for gender equality and sexual orientation equality are now turning their attention to transgender. But from whatever given that, and given that you obviously have a strong interest in it, and it's not just an interest, but you've made that part of your lifestyle. I'm always a big believer in trying low risk actions. So with me, I'd be going to open. I develop a 2-minute. Monologue, series of jokes, stories, whatever, just 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. And I would try those out at open mic nights. There are many clubs that have open mic nights, usually on a Monday or Tuesday night. I happen to know one. It's called the No Name in Sausalito, but there's millions of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, at the end, beg for honest feedback. Certainly I'd listen for the amount of applause and laughter versus flat faces. People are not usually generally rude about, especially when you deal with a sensitive topic like transgender, but they may be flat and just kind of stare there. So try to get some feedback, honest feedback, and maybe after you do your 3-minute routine, sit down and have a drink over there and talk with people at the bar and ask them for honest feedback. You don't have to necessarily accept it. Sometimes feedback is poorly given. It's bad feedback, but at least consider it and then continue revising your act. And then seeing if after a while you're feeling good about it, then you should make a little video, a little YouTube video. There's, as I've often said on the show, there's a videographer under every rock in the Bay Area, high school kids, college kids. There's a million film majors spending a fortune to get that film degree, and they never make any money, but they're always trying to develop their reel. And since transgender is so cool and in these, or just simply transsexual or whatever, any of this sexual ambiguity stuff, they might love to make your video. And then you just edit it down to 1 or 2 minutes of the best stuff, and then post it on YouTube and see if that it gets attention. And of course, you have to try to market it, which means you use your social media and your friends and email or whatever to try to get them to watch it and Facebook like it, and then see if it builds or not. And here's the punchline: if it doesn't build, it's still worth doing. Every one of us has a desire for creative outlet.
Yes.
And some of it is remunerative, and some of it is simply a hobby. And there is a worthy place in life for those kind of things. So even if it doesn't go viral, you've got a hobby. If it does go viral, or you get lots of signs that it works well, and you can then say, I'm going to send my video to Yoshi's or whatever the clubs are that you most think would be appropriate, especially, I would guess, in the Castro, but other places as well.
Mm-hmm.
You could be launching a career or at least a sideline. So you have almost nothing to lose. It sounds like something worth pursuing, because I'm not asking you to invest a lot of money. I'm not asking you to invest huge amounts of time. I'm not asking you to quit your job. I'm saying take it seriously, do it incrementally, bit by bit, and then the world will tell you whether it's a great hobby, something you simply find personally rewarding, or maybe even a career sideline, or even your full way of making a living. How's that sound?
That sounds fabulous.
Okay,
thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Okay, so I love these calls. No matter, there is no problem I haven't heard yet, but I'd love to hear yours and see if I can help you. So if you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, whether you're 16 or 76, entry level or very top level, I've been a consultant to 15 college presidents, to lots of doctors and lawyers and executives, but also some real strugglers. I can usually help you with your problem. And here on the radio, this is my pro bono work. I do this for free, which I don't do during the week. So take advantage of the freebie. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and KLW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls, I'm going to share some more careers that many people find interesting and rewarding. One of my favorites that doesn't require much education is hairstylist. You don't normally think of that because it's not a very prestigious one, but it really, there have been many organizations, including the University of Chicago, if I recall correctly, that did a big nationwide survey of what careers are most rewarding. And hairstylist comes up nearly always at the top of the list, or near the top of the list, of job satisfaction, because you have a high success rate. You're successful with almost every client. You're working in a pleasant environment. It's an upbeat thing. You're having conversations. You have regular customers who you meet every, you know, month or two. So it's a great career. And it's also can't be offshored. So that's one. Now, of course, everybody knows that today healthcare is growing because of our aging boomers, and we're covering ever more people, not just Obamacare, but we are almost certainly, in my judgment, when Hillary gets elected, going to move to single payer, which is going to mean that everybody's going to be covered. And we're going to, once comprehensive immigration reform occurs, which is one of Hillary's priorities, every one of those people who are currently illegal will be covered under our healthcare system. And so there will be a great need for more healthcare providers, but not necessarily doctors, because they're really expensive. And with all those people being added to the rolls, the majority of whom are low pay and high need, there's going to be a lot more use of lower cost medical providers. And, of course, the number one, and I've said it before, but it remains my number one overall, depends on the person, of course, my number one healthcare career recommendation for the future is physician assistant. The training, of course, is much shorter and less expensive than an MD. The pay is good. They make six figures. And PAs get to do most of what physicians do. In fact, they get to do the things that are most likely to yield a happy ending. You know, wellness exams, a preliminary diagnosis, a basic treatment, follow-up of relatively simple or manageable or outright curable conditions. So physician assistant is just, you know, a great career for somebody who wants to work with sick people. You know, another example of that lower level healthcare career that I think will have to boom is anesthesiologist assistant. Anesthesiologists are the highest paid of all specialties. You work alongside and or under an anesthesiologist, and during surgery, your job as the anesthesiologist assistant is theoretically just to operate equipment, monitor the patient, and do some pre and post surgical care. But I've heard that there is quite a bit of autonomy. I don't want to overstate it, but there ends up being, I'm guessing, significantly less use of anesthesiologists because of the presence of anesthesiology assistants. It doesn't require, you know, an anesthesiologist has got to go to medical school, $300,000. He's got a long residency, which I think is 5 years or something like that. Whereas with an anesthesiology assistant, you're also going to make six figures, but it requires it does require a pre-med bachelor's degree and a 2-year master's. That's a hell of a lot less. So that's a career that, again, given that we're going to be expanding healthcare enormously, the kind of career that will likely burgeon almost, you know, I can't guarantee anything, but, you know, almost assuredly. This is one that's simply going to be the result of increased understanding that so much of who we are is genetically determined. I heard a story. I went out last night with friends, and we asked my wife Barbara and I went out with a couple, and we asked about how their two kids are. And one of them is doing great, doing fine. And the other one is, to use their term, a vagabond. She rides trains and has an alcohol problem and freeloads off people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She was a cutter as a teenager, you know, cut her wrists and all the rest of it, and all of that. And then she said, the mom said, you know, we asked, how could you have two kids so different? How did they turn out so different? She said, well, one isn't mine biologically. And then we looked at the medical records, the school records, the medical records of the mother, of the birth mother, and the birth mother's experience was exactly the same. She was a cutter, just like her daughter. She developed an alcohol problem very early. She became a vagabond-like person just riding around on trains. It's uncanny how similar. And this was not the first of such stories. We know somebody who is a grant writer, a wonderful person. She's had two kids, one of whom was biologically hers and the other was adopted. And the biological kid was very much like the mom. And the adopted kid was widely, let's just say, challenged. I don't need to go into details. But the point is we're learning ever more, not just from anecdotes like this, but from neuroscience research and genetics research, that so much is genetic. And what does that mean for people who are not you know, going to go be a PhD in molecular biology, but somebody who's going to help counsel the many people who, for example, are deciding should they get pregnant. As we learn ever more about the human genome, there's going to be big dilemmas about whether somebody should get pregnant, whether somebody should get a treatment or whatever. They enter the genetic counselor. And that's a really rewarding career. You know, it's a counselor type who's helping people to make such big decisions as, like, let's say you have a 25% chance of passing on the genes for alcoholism and 50%, let's say, for schizophrenia. Do you want to get pregnant? Really interesting and difficult stuff. And I think that's a career of the future. It requires a master's degree. It's not a PhD. It's not a, you know, MD or whatever. It's one of those great careers. Again, if you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, my job here at KELW is to help you. I do what I call workovers. I either help you figure out what career you should pursue, help you land the job, help you succeed on the job, or otherwise address your malaise. And, of course, if you do have a business idea that you're either thinking about and want to get my opinion, or you're already in the business and you either want some ideas on how to take it to the next level, or it's struggling and you're wondering whether you should shut it down, those are all good reasons to call for a workover. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Some other healthcare careers that I think are two that are excellent. One is optometrists. Optometrists are halfway between the ophthalmologist, those are the medical doctors that do eye surgery. It's halfway between that, an optometrist is halfway between that, and an optician. An optician is the person who basically just fits you for glasses. And the optometrist is that person who you know, keeps asking you, is it better with lens one or lens two? And after a while, you can't tell. It makes you feel like an idiot. But optometrists are far from idiots. You do need to get either a four-year post-bachelor's degree, or they have these combined six-year programs where you get a bachelor's and the doctor of optometry degree in 6 years. And that'll get you status. It'll get you a six-figure income. You get to be called doctor, but you're unlikely to get an emergency call in the middle of the night. You know, Dr. Eyeball, I need a new contact lens now. Anyway, so that's a great career. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Oh, good morning, Lindley. Marty, I just wanted to help you out in the mid-level practitioner realm. I'm a nurse midwife. I've spoken to you before. This is a fantastic career for people to go into.
Right.
We're growing in the midwifery community. We don't always deliver at home. We deliver in hospital with physician coverage. It's a fabulous career. I've been doing it for 35 years. I highly recommend those nurses who are going on to think about master's degrees to go into midwifery, because we're growing practices and we need good midwives, because that's what's going to come in the next 10 years. We're booming.
Makes great sense. So, tell me something that might surprise me about being a nurse midwife.
You know what? It's like growing a bigger family than I've already got. You know, my patients, I deliver with my partner. I own my own practice with my partner. We actually deliver 30 to 35 babies a month.
Wow.
We have a 6% C-section rate. You're not going to find that. And we deliver in hospital. We have a fabulous obstetric group that covers us, 24/7 coverage. If we have to have a C-section, we actually assist with the C-sections. We have continuity of care. We do GYN. We do annual exams for wonderful women from teens through to the 80s. So it's a wonderful opportunity for women who, you know, they're looking, they're new to the area, they've Apple is on our doorstep. Google and Yahoo help fund my practice. We have a low interest rate loan. I delivered the owner of Google, the owner of Yahoo, and we went to them. And we have a beautiful, beautiful practice that's expanding. So, you know, I hope that's surprising.
It is, and it's terrific. So if you've piqued somebody's interest, what would be their first baby step that they need to take to pursue this?
You know, it depends on where they are. If they're a high school senior thinking of going into nursing, I would personally, if they could, go into a master's program first. If they have no other opportunity but to go into a local, like De Anza has a really good RM program. There are stepping stones into master's and midwifery. UCSF has a great program. Start researching. What is it to be a midwife? In this country, unlike from where I'm from, There are various levels and differences in midwifery, but the Certified Nurse Midwife program is perhaps the one that's much, much better because you can make home in the hospital. I would probably go to the American College of Nurse Midwives website. They have great tools to next steps for these young men and women. There are men in midwifery as well.
You have been a wonderful call. You are an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce, and I thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome, Marty. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Indeed, all of you are welcome to call in if you have a work-related problem. Whatever the level, whatever the problem, even if it's indirectly related. You know, I've certainly learned over the years that so many of my clients will walk in the door and say their problem is their job or that they want to change careers. And there are things that are really impeding that and that are more underneath it, that are more personal or psychological or emotional or drug or relationship issues. So anything that's even indirectly related to career is appropriate to call here for a workover. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And noting that I tend to focus on more professional careers, but there are many people who do not have whatever, the intellectual capabilities or the education or whatever. I want to point something out that's true. The you know, even though we hear about how the U.S. Postal Service is getting dramatic competition from FedEx and from UPS, they continue to grow for reasons that are beyond me. And I just received a notification that they're having a job fair because there are jobs open. And it's going to be this Saturday, March 5th, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and then again from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the main Oakland post office, which is at 1675 7th Street in Oakland. So those are jobs for folks you know, I suspect you don't need college, although I'm sure there are some jobs that do, but there's a full range of employment. The little slogan they're using is, you know, the USPS delivers, so I'm assuming that they're looking for delivery people. So there you go. We've got plenty of calls on the line now, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi, it's you. Hello, are you there? Okay, let's go to the next line. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Are you speaking to me?
I am.
I'm not going to tell you my name. I'm going to tell you that I think you did a disservice to adopted parents and adopted children everywhere. First of all, I agree totally. There's a huge genetic component that we now understand in nature and nurture. I'm the parent of two adoptive children. Both couldn't be more different. One of them had a grandparent who killed herself, a mother who was a prostitute and a drug addict, and we gave her help and tutoring from the time she was in kindergarten. She's bloomed. She's experienced the genetic best that there could possibly be. She's getting her master's degree in art. She's lovely. She's straight. She's beautiful. She's a wonderful girl. We have an adoptive son who has a master's degree. Both my children are artists. They take after their father. No one could quite understand how they managed to have his talent and not be genetically related. They definitely have their own personalities, but I think part of the problem buried in what you said is that parents who see their adoptive children and their biological children as potentially different raise them that way, and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Kenby, I thank you very much for the perspective. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, thank you. My name's Joanne. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
I work for the city. I don't want to say what department, but it's a very public, I deal with the public all day long.
Okay.
And I love it. As a matter of fact, I'm probably, I've gained a reputation among my coworkers. Any person from any demographic who comes in, no matter what the difficulty and challenge, somehow they're just like, I manage to relax and calm them. And to use a much overused word, I guess I'm a people person. In any case, it's a real gift that I have. But it's not really one that's, I don't know quite how to word this in a more elegant manner, but it's not one that's really, I don't want to say it's not valued, but in the job that I have, it's not really even required, if you will. Most people, as a matter of fact, who work where I work are more introverts, and they don't particularly like dealing with the public, ironically. In any case, I have, over the years, as side things, I started my own business once a few years ago, being kind of a personal assistant, just doing odds and ends, whatever someone wanted, and actually I got a few clients and it went well, but the kind of hustle of having to go out and get clients was a little much. In any case, I've tried to think how I could utilize, I'm very much an extrovert, I'm wonderful with people of every demographic. I don't have, probably the biggest thing over my head is, I come from a family of artists and I kind of always pursued arts and so on and so forth, and I don't have a degree. I would like to use this gift that I have in some, I've kind of thought of doing my own business in one way or another. I met with a friend last night who has a dog walking business, and he said, you know, you might want to consider that. One of the biggest things is getting people, it's more about having the people like you than the dogs, you know, if you already kind of have a thing with dogs. In any case, I just thought calling and get your input. Thank you.
Well, I'm wondering whether, you know, given that when you were a personal assistant, even though you did it well, you found the hustle to gland work too much, won't that be the same if you try to be a dog walker? You're absolutely right that, you know, there's a lot of people who could be good with dogs, but in the end, you've got to get the people to love you. So I'm a little worried about you being self-employed and the artist personality. Sometimes there are some artists who are very businesslike, but somebody who's more of an artist person tends to not be. That's a second piece of evidence that you're not going to be the go-getter businesswoman who is necessary to be self-employed. And when you, you know, the older I get, the more...
Yes, by the way, that's a good point, yes.
Okay. And the older I get, the more I become... And not just that I'm... No, it's not that I'm older. It's that I'm seeing ever fewer stable jobs. And that people, especially in the private sector, are working part-time, temp, on projects, and they're spending half their life looking for their next project. And you've got a job in the city where, while they don't value, you know, those...
By the way, I need to interject here. One of the challenges is it's a part-time job. So actually, I need something else.
Okay.
Most of the jobs in the... where I work are part-time.
Well, what I was going to suggest, though, is if you're working for the city, even if you're working part-time, you already have an in,
mm-hmm.
both in terms of the relationships you've no doubt developed, but also in the scoring criteria for employment in government jobs. Usually they give brownie points, bonus points to people who are already in the system. I'm wondering what you need is maybe you're in the right church in the wrong pew. Maybe you need to find a different agency that might need a full-time person where you're being able to be excellent with all different kinds of people would be more valued. There's a lot of public-facing jobs in government, and that way, you know, I don't know if you've already, even as a part-timer, that you've been contributing to retirement or other kind of benefits, it would be able to be synergistic. I'm wondering if you've done a thorough enough job of finding out what other entities, agencies within the city government might be both a source of full-time employment as well as a particular boss that values the ability to work with a wide range of people.
I have thought of that, and you're probably right. I probably have not done a thorough enough search, but that's kind of the track that I've been on for a while, is researching different... a woman who I work with worked at City Hall for a while. That's not where we're working. And she was doing kind of part-time on-call special events. That's why she left, because it was more just kind of on-call. And she, you know, that's one department that it seems that's kind of more of an on-call thing. But yes, I have been looking in that direction. It doesn't seem, I haven't been able to find anything, but maybe it's just that I haven't, you know, I have to keep at it.
Have you been doing it as, you know, the way an artist would do it would be, Nick, and this is a stereotype, would be, you know, she knew a couple of people, a couple of agencies, and she reached out and it didn't work. Oh, well, that's dead. The more thorough way would be to look at the directory of every agency in the city and write down every agency where you could envision they have a significant public-facing component.
Okay.
Right? And then go to the website for that agency, Find mm-hmm. somebody. They usually have some of the senior staff's bios on there.
Okay.
Find a person who just your intuition tells you might particularly well connect with, and either write or phone them and asking for advice about how you might transition. That might lead to 5 or 10 conversations or 3 or whatever, but a more
right.
thorough exploration of what the range of options are within the city. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. That's an excellent idea. I'm going to start pursuing that next week. And as a final thing, and that's a very good way to go about it. And you're right. I laughed because my tendency was to do it in the former. Is there anything outside? And I certainly appreciate your point, and you're correct that my in that I already have. But just out of curiosity, is there anything that outside of,
sure.
of government.
Let's play. Let's play. So what I'm going to do now is we're going to play what I call the optometry game. I just gave a little pitch for optometry as an interesting career. And have you ever been to the eye doctor and the eye doctor asks you, is it better with lens 1 or lens 2? And then after
right,
a while you
totally.
Can't
tell.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just tell you a couple of careers that where somebody who is public facing and gets along with different kind of people
right.
might do well. And you simply tell me which of the two you like better and we'll keep playing around until we find something that sounds good. Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay. Would you rather do sales or fundraising?
Ooh. My gut feeling is fundraising, but I think I'm better at sales.
Now, would you rather sell a cosmetic or would you rather sell a medical product?
Cosmetic.
Would you rather sell a cosmetic?
Well, of course, that might be tricky because I don't wear much makeup, but I do love clothes and kind of a presentation, so.
So would you rather sell clothes or cosmetics?
Clothes.
Would you rather sell clothes retail or be a manufacturer's rep?
Ooh. Man, that's hard.
Well, there's a lot more money and regular hours as a manufacturer's rep. So
right.
what brand clothes do you wear a lot of?
I have also a gift for being able to pick just the right thing at trendy thrift stores. I don't wear designer things, and a friend just took me to opening night of the symphony, and I had a Forever 21 dress, and all the women were coming up to me saying, oh my God, where did you get that fabulous dress?
Mm-hmm.
So I never wear name brand things. That's another gift that I have.
Okay. So let's go back to the optometry game. Would you rather own a thrift store or would you rather work in a thrift store?
Oh my gosh. Wow. I don't know because I know ownership of a business. I can't answer that.
Yeah. The fact that you're not a self-starter with the hustling and all that suggests that you'd be better as a worker or even the
Probably.
Manager. So let's say there were two options. One was to be the manager of a thrift store.
Right.
You know, sometimes sales, sometimes management, sometimes buying, sometimes, you know, selling.
Right.
You know, would you rather manage a thrift store or would you rather try to get a public-facing job at a different agency in the city of San Francisco?
Man, it would depend upon the public-facing job because, although I'm not comfortable telling you, because I think people might be listening, what department I work at, most people would consider the department that I work in very public-facing and
Well, I'm going to stop you. The problem you told me was that you're just not valued by the people there or the boss there. So
no, actually, my direct boss actually does value me. It's more just that in my years with the city, I've questioned whether having my skills, actually in my actual workplace, it is valued. But overall, it's not, it doesn't seem valued within city work.
No, that's the classic stereotype that government workers, you know, you're just punching a clock and, you know, you're not that.
Exactly. That's it. Right. In other words, if someone walks up and I kind of say, oh, hi, and I give my name and say, how can I help you? I'd love, my coworker says, yes. Either one is totally fine with the civil service area we work in, and that's kind of been my frustration. As a matter of fact, I've had many letters written by people who I've helped to the head of a very, very large department, but it just, and I'd like to somehow put that more to use, and I just question whether it even exists.
So does that really, is it more of an internal issue? You know,
possibly.
Meaning, it shouldn't, in an ideal world, and I know we're all subject to other people's opinions and what other people are valuing, but if you in your heart of hearts are proud of yourself for being that way, and I don't blame you,
right?
It shouldn't matter what your coworkers or anybody else, or even some of the customers may not even express their appreciation. You do it because you think it's the right way to be, and you're proud of yourself.
True. I suppose I'd like to be maybe go into something where I'm paid more for having that extra thing.
Right, right. And that's why I'm suggesting that you find these other agencies where you might find a full-time job and where it is a more, maybe it's higher stakes. You know, let's say, for example, I don't know, maybe you're working for the Department of Parking Tickets or whatever. You know, it's kind of low stakes. But let's say you were working in public health where life and death is involved and you're trying to get somebody to, to get them the health care they need in a desperate situation. Then that might be seen as, you know, somebody who fights for them to the end might be more valued. And there may be full-time jobs doing it and therefore getting you more pay. And again, if the stress is higher, you know, there is sometimes the pay is higher because they're expecting you to have to deal with more stress.
Exactly.
I think you need to think about the thrift store thing, but my intuition is telling me you need to do a thorough job of finding some agency within the city that's going to value you more and have a full-time job, and maybe where the stakes are higher, that your customer service orientation is valued. Does that make sense?
Okay, yes, it totally makes sense. Actually, I think I'm going to start on that next week, making the list, kind of going about it in a more business-like fashion, as you suggested.
Great. Well, I thank you for calling Work with Marty.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Joanne. Be well. Okay, I'll just give out the phone number one more time, and then that will be it. So this is the Procrastinator Special. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, my job is to try to help you, and the price is right, zero, zippo, nada. The phone number here, Work with Marty and Nemco and KALW, I call a work over, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And when I was ticking off some careers that I know that many people like, I talked last about optometrist. So the yin of that yang is audiologist. As I said, audiologists are kind of the ear equivalent of optometrists, except it's only a 3-year post-bachelor's till they can call you doctor, unlike an optometry, which is 4-year. And today's hearing aids, I don't know if you've seen any, they're much smaller. That not only improves hearing, but it can ameliorate some other conditions. And you're likely to have patients, thanks to the aging boomers. And, you know, it's all well and good for me to give you this little soundbite, but, when you find a career intriguing, most people, again, they're kind of slipshod about how they investigate, even though it's their life that's involved here. So, you want to start by Googling it. And, Google the term like audiologist career or optometrist career. If you're more visually oriented, use the video tab on Google. That'll get you to mainly YouTube videos. Could be invaluable for learning. And then maybe at that point you'll ask somebody you know, or maybe from your alumni association or a LinkedIn connection, which are wafer-thin connections, or even the Yellow Pages. See if you can informational interview with them or job shadow them. There are great questions to ask, like, why don't you walk me through how you got into this career? That's like when I asked that nurse midwife, I asked, what are the best ways to get trained? What might surprise me about the career? I asked her the same thing. Those are great questions to kind of tease out information that you might not have gotten from articles or YouTube videos. Another question I love is, why do people leave the career? That tells you a lot of the potential problems with it. So those are my thoughts on some careers that many people find useful and how to go look into them. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
I don't exactly know where I am. I'm 29, and I just got certified as a massage therapist, but I've had a very rough ride. In high school, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a scientist because my mom is a scientist, and actually I'm a test tube baby, so I was born out of science. I tried going back to school for chemistry, but I'm in too much debt to be able to afford to go back to school for chemistry, and I want to be a doctor, and I want to help people, and right now, for the first time in my life, I am doing private practice and working out on my own.
Okay, and so what's your question?
I don't know exactly where to go from here, or like how to set up my business, or like what avenue would be best to take, what resources I have.
Well, given that you want to heal people, you know, there's basically, you know, all massage therapy is healing in some sense, even if you're perfectly healthy. I've had massages, and they're really just very comforting. I like them. But there are massage therapists who specialize in medical problems, people who are dealing with cancer pain, or people who are just all kinds of mental, physical, I'm not familiar with them, but physical problems. And they become, you know, and they will visit them in their homes or in their nursing homes or whatever. Do you have a greater interest in doing that? That would, the pay would be higher, and you'd be more like this kind of allied health professional rather than just a comfort provider. What's your feeling about focusing on patients with medical, people with medical issues, and doing massage for them?
I'd rather work on people to improve health and make people like maybe people who are at the top of their game, like bringing health and fitness and wellness like to the peak, rather than dealing with people who are who have problems.
So, which of the following two feels like a better route for who you are? One would be simply within the kind you start with, massage, and then as needed, you know, or as appropriate, you talk to them maybe for 10 minutes before to kind of inventory their lives. And maybe they've got a substance disorder, or maybe they're not exercising, or maybe they've got undue stress and the massage will only temporarily take care of it. You might just in the informal course, or just like being a good friend, you know, be a good listener and help them come up with a strategy that would enrich their, you know, help improve their performance. Or the alternative is, you know, there are certainly all kinds of, not just, I'm not talking about fitness coaches who are just involved in helping people do more push-ups, but there are wellness coaches who help explore those things more, you know, more systematically. Would you rather informally, as a massage therapist, bring up these issues, these wellness issues, or would you rather try to take some courses and get specific training in how to be a wellness coach of some sort?
So I currently do this for people, but I can't bill for it because I'm only certified as a massage therapist. So it's like I'm already doing it, and that really is where my passion is bringing people to wellness.
Well, you know, you're saying bill, so these are all insuring, are these are not pay-for-service people?
Yeah, but I only bill for my body work hours. I don't bill for my conversation, my time.
Well, I think rather than calling it a conversation, how do you feel about the following? To say that at least in session one, you have a comprehensive approach to wellness. Yes, they're going to have their 60-minute or 90-minute, whatever it is, massage, but that there is also a consultation that goes on that looks more holistically at the person's various elements of their wellness, and that the cost of that, both the consultation as well as the massage, is X dollars, and you build in an amount for that. They can, of course, opt out of that and say, I just want a massage, in which case you give them that. But let's, for argument's sake, let's say your massage costs $75. You could say it's $110 for the consultation and massage, or just $75 for the massage, and you could try that out without, you know, any real problem. Now, you're not going to, you know, make any medical advice or do anything that's risky or play psychoanalyst with them, but, you know, there's no, you know, people can be coaches and advice givers and listeners without certification. How does that feel to you?
That sounds smart. I work with people on all different ends of their spectrum. So some people I work with maybe may have be pulling in, you know, easily $1 million a year, and some people I work with may be pulling in nothing, like homeless, and I'm working with people in the Bay Area who are millionaires and people who have nothing, and so like I have trouble with my fee scale and like how to make, you know, my business work for me and but also be able to do what I love for the people that I think need it most.
Well, most people have, you know, do one of two things. They either do as I do. I don't have a sliding scale because it's so difficult for me to really assess, you know, whom to give sliding scale to and not. And so I just have either my full paying clients, but I do a fair amount of pro bono work where some people I just see for free. And so you either do that or you have a sliding scale.
So I should I should maybe have my rates and then do some pro bono.
Right.
I think the sliding scale model, like I was playing with it at first, and it definitely it's tricky because
yep.
there are a lot of people who take advantage of
yep.
that
yep.
or,
yep.
or you know, are in the middle and really don't
yep.
realize.
I used to have a sliding scale, and then so I would give somebody their initial letter pleaded poverty, and then they would work with me, and I would find out that they were loaded, or their husband or spouse was loaded, or whatever. So yes, that's why I decided to not try to intuit the need for a sliding scale from an initial letter. It's just too difficult to do that accurately. So that's why there's some where it's really clear in my mind. I have no question that this person is got needs and that they can't afford, and I will go and I will just do them for free. Or at least I'll do a session for free. That's what I typically do. I typically do a session for free, and then depending upon what occurs, I'll either say, well, there is my gift to you, and go forth and make the most of it, or I will offer them an additional session for free, depending upon the human being. Not just on their, if I feel they're both needy and I feel that they're really profiting from my work and they're likely to make a difference in the world, I might give them an additional session for free. So it's flexible. I have my regular, most of my, 95% of my clients are people I just, you know, charge my regular full rate to. And then occasionally, as I'm emotionally moved, as well as rationally moved, I will see somebody for free.
All right. Well, you're very inspirational. Thank you so much. It's nice to talk to someone who's so clear about this and kind of on the same page.
Well, I've been doing it a long time, and there is a benefit for staying with things. Thanks very much for the call. You know, that's really true. I have learned that it really does take a lot of years to become really expert at anything, and that so many of my clients who have failed in life end up being dabblers. They just dabble. It's so exciting to learn a little bit about new things and do four different things and whatever. But in the end, they just are not really that expert, and they don't, you know, they are. That's why the cliche came about. Jack of all trades, master of none. You know, after a while, I mean, I know many people who are expert at something, and then they devote, you know, much more serious time to something else because they've really got their main thing down. But there really is something to be said for the Malcolm Gladwell thing, that it does take 10,000 to 20,000 hours to really get to be an expert. Anyway, I apologize to those of you who are now on hold. We don't have time, so that's why I beg you to call in the show earlier. Please call back next week. The show is now over. That is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do more workovers on calls, and I'm going to talk with a really interesting guy. A guy I actually met at a party. His name is Gary Gwilliam. He's quite a well-known trial attorney. And he's going to talk about not just what it's really like to be a trial attorney in the courtroom or in his work, but we have no idea how powerfully impactful being a stressful thing like a doctor or a trial lawyer is on your personal life. He's going to be very revealing about that, and I think you'll find it very interesting. Anyway, until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
go to Marty.